From Hobart and William Smith Colleges and The Herald, I'm Alex Cry. Welcome to Career Journeys. On our show today is Brad Falchuk from the class of 1993. Brad is the creator, executive producer, director, and writer for shows such as Glee, American Horror Story, 9-1-1, American Crime Story, and Pose. His work has garnered 10 Emmy nominations and 2 wins, along with 14 other nominations from the Producers and Writers Guilds. His work has won Peabody Awards and been named TV Program of the Year by the American Film Institute. At the colleges, Falchuk wrote and directed his own film and was an English major. We're very excited to have him on the show today by phone from Los Angeles. Brad, thank you so much for being on the show today. How are you doing?
Great. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's great to be able to chat with you. I want to start off by asking, how did you get to where you are today from HWS?
Well, I mean, it's 25 years, and so I think that's an important part of the conversation, is that any real success in life, it takes time and a lot of hard work and a lot of learning and failure and all of that. And so when I left Hobart William Smith, I wasn't exactly clear about the path I wanted to take to get where I wanted to get. I knew I wanted to write and direct movies at the time, is what I was thinking of. I didn't quite know the best way to do that. My father, who was a very wise guy, suggested I go to film school. And so I applied to film schools in that time right after graduation, and got into a few. And the best one I got into was the American Film Institute out here in L.A., which sort of very renowned place. And I was shocked that I got in, and very, very happy. But I got in as a they have different sort of categories of students, and there's directing, there's producing, there's editing, and there's writing. And so I did not get in as a director, but I did get in as a writer. And I understand why. I made a film at Hobart William Smith that technically, as now looking back on it, was a total disaster, and I can see why they didn't want me as a director. But the screenwriting people who saw the movie said, oh, this person has an interesting voice. They don't know what they're doing, but they have an interesting voice. And so I think they were drawn to that. So I came out to L.A. and went to 2 years at AFI, and then just started writing every day, all the time, in order to get material to show people, to show that I could do this. And that is the thing about being a writer, which is great, is that your work speaks for itself. And it doesn't have to be perfect at first, but it speaks for itself. And people say, oh, you're a writer, let me read something. And so in order to have things for people to read, you need lots of things that you've written. So I spent a lot of time writing and worked as a personal trainer to a few hours a day so I could have other time during the day to write. Didn't get a lot of traction as a screenwriter, switched to start doing TV because it's much more of a writer's medium, and started getting much more traction there and much more attention. And then started doing that. And once I was in that game, you know, the way that TV writing works is once you're in that game, there's a lot of room for advancement. It's structured. It's almost like militarily structured in terms of a hierarchy. There's different levels of writer depending on how much experience you have. But there's room to really grow. And also you're in a writer's room with other writers. It doesn't matter if somebody has been doing it for 20 years and you've been doing it for 6 months. If you're good, you shine. And so I think I was good, and I got the attention of people, and then started creating shows after that, and then things sort of took off from there. But I always find the early part is more interesting than the later part, because once you're in it, then it sort of ends up being a lot of the same stuff, you're just hoping to create something that catches on. Before that, you're really trying to make your mark in a way that from zero, which is much harder.
How were you able to make your mark? What were some of the scripts that you were writing, or some of the ideas that you came up with to try and break in?
You know, when you want to be a TV writer, what you do is you write episodes of television shows that are already on the air, not so that you can sell those episodes to the show, because that almost never, ever, 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 ever happens, because most producers, we won't read a script of an episode that of our show, because there's legal issues, and it's not, we will see things in that script that annoy us that another writer who isn't working on the show won't see, and so it's never a good idea to show that, almost never a good idea to show a spec, they call it a spec, I guess, speculative script to the actual show. And what that allows is for the producers of the shows to be able to read your writing. And if you want to be a TV writer, if you're not a creator, if you want to be a TV writer, the thing you have to be able to do is to tell a story and be able to write, but you also have to kind of be able to write in someone else's voice. So the writers on my shows need to write in a way that sounds kind of like me, because I've created the template. And so you write these scripts of these shows to show both that you can write and also that you can write in someone else's voice, which is a very specific skill. And there are some great writers that can't. And there are some really good TV writers that maybe are, that's their sort of gift, is they can write in someone else's voice, and maybe their voice isn't as strong. So it's a specific gift. And so I wrote like a spec episode of The Practice and of The Sopranos and of The X-Files, just a bunch of ER. I wrote an ER once, and just a bunch of different ones, and use those to sort of be my entree into getting jobs. And again, the difference between a TV writer and a movie writer is a TV writer has to, you know, sort of spend a lot of time with people, and you're spending time in a writer's room, and you're also producing, and you need to have a sort of personality traits that are good for that. And so the combination of the scripts and then, you know, sort of how I was once I got there, it was sort of the right venue for me to shine a little bit.
And so what is your work like now? Do you have a kind of day-to-day schedule that you follow for the different shows that you're writing for or show running?
It's sort of whatever's in front of me is what I do. So you will have any particular show needs more attention than any other show at any time. So production schedules are sort of staggered. So at any point there might be a bunch of shows in production, and then things get a little crazy because you're trying to get scripts out and do production meetings and casting and costuming and sets and putting out fires and all kinds of stuff. I'm sure no one literally putting out fires, but putting out creative fires or production fires. And so the schedule, generally I go into my office and I'm there, and, you know, meetings throughout the day. There'll be different writers' meetings, so sitting with different writers, going over scripts and breaking stories and giving notes. Different meetings with other producers to say, okay, what's happening with this? Or somebody maybe be taking the lead on some other show, and I might go talk to them and say, what's happening? Anything you need from me? Or I noticed this. Have you taken care of that? Phone calls from agents. It's sort of it's a lot of the same thing. It's just sort of different versions of it. So depending on the show, it's a little bit different, but the actual work is pretty much the same.
What shows are you working on right now?
At the moment, we just started shooting season 2 of Pose, and so we're working on that. Working on the next season of 9-1-1. We started working on the next season of American Horror Story, which starts shooting in June. And then right now The Politician is fully wrapped and done, and so there's promotion and other things to do at this point, but in terms of the show is done, and we'll start writing season 2 probably in July.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
What kind of things do you think about when you're creating a show, when you're writing a show, because you have so many different things in production right now, and you were talking a little bit ago about writing in a particular voice, and that if you create a show, it's written in your voice. All of these shows seem so different. So how do you balance the voices and the different characters for them?
It's easier. Well, it feels easier than it would seem, because it's me doing each one, and so I'm only can bring what I bring to each one, and so I bring my version of whatever that show is to each show, and that's what gives that show its specific voice, is my version of it. So I think there are, I happen to have a kind of a mind that can dance between different worlds and find myself, or find what's interesting, or find something curious about any different world. It could be firemen, it could be, you know, the trans ball scene of in the New York in the 80s. It's like, I don't feel one show bleeding into the other. Like, oh, I'm bringing this one into this one. Once whatever I'm dealing with, I'm sort of dealing with that. So I don't know. I feel like the answer to that question is the reason why I'm doing all of those ones is because that's how I like to do it. So if I didn't like to do it that way and that wasn't how my brain worked, I probably wouldn't be, if that makes sense. It's not like I had to train myself to do that. I created a world in which I could do that.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And it's really interesting to see the different worlds you're bringing into it.
I find it incredibly fun, and I get, if I'm working on just one show, I get kind of bored. It's like, because you are kind of doing the same thing over and over, and there is a certain amount of craft to it, where it's like, okay, I'm making another table, and it's really amazing to do it, and I care about each one, and it's the technique is really interesting. At the same time, it's like, okay, I've done this already a bunch, so if I couldn't bounce around and be fascinated by something new throughout the day, then I think it would get a little boring.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it reminds me a little bit, too, of kind of the liberal arts model of different subjects and different ideas.
I think that's right, yeah.
So that's right. Jumping off with that, how do you think HWS prepared you for your current work when you were here?
Well, I mean, in many ways, I mean, the most fundamental way was, I mean, the most direct way, I should say, was in the theater and film classes I took there. And Professor Gross was a professor there, and Liz Lyons, professor there. And, you know, you have a dream, you have an idea of something you want to do, and that could be anything. That could be medicine, that could be physics, that could be arts, painting, it could be theater, it could be film, anything. And the point, I think, of going to college is to have suddenly an experience of what the reality of that means, and sort of to contextualize it and to give it names. And so for me, having watched TV and movies, you know, aggressively my whole life, to sit in Liz Lyons' class and say, okay, now we're going to do a film interpretation. And so we're going to sit here and I'm going to explain to you the things you're seeing that you know, that you feel, that you can, that you've noticed but you don't have names for, like mise-en-scène and anything like that, where you have, okay, oh, that's why that's there. Oh, that's why he did that. Oh, that's why that director did that. That's why she was thinking there. And deconstructing it in a way that suddenly the instinct is there, but suddenly there's language for it. And as a professional, when you're directing a scene, you have the instinct for all the things you want to have happening, but to have the language understand, it's like, well, this needs to be here, and this color matters, and the framing of this matters, and where she stands is going to make a difference, is all because you've learned that in a classroom. And for many people, everybody's different, for many people, learning it in a classroom is a very, very smart way to sort of solidify it in your brain, and so that when you're actually doing the work, it's in there. It feels like instinct, even though it isn't. It's actually learned. And so same thing with theater and working with actors and breaking down a scene. You know, I remember Professor Gross had some great, which seemed at the time like, I don't know what this is, like breaking down a scene in a play that was a sort of a confusing play, but beat by beat. So what are the beats of this scene? And that's all I do all day, is write scenes with beats and give notes to writers saying, well, this beat is off and this one is off. And so to be able to beat out a scene like that was something that at the time I wasn't sure what was happening, but now I see as such a huge part of my life. And so on a direct way, it was the actual classrooms and the actual classes I was taking. And in an indirect way, it's, as you said, it's you know, the ability to say, I'm going to take a 18th century history class. I'm going to take a class about Vienna in the 17th century. It's like, I'm going to take a physics class. It's like all of these things are things that professionally I'm not pursuing them, but they all factor into every time I write something. It's like, well, I remember that thing from physics, and that kind of piqued my curiosity, and so I'm going to go look up something about quantum physics. I'm going to put something about quantum physics in this scene. It's going to be kind of cool. So it's like you're pulling suddenly from all of these pieces of information and knowledge that you've been given. That again, did they mean anything at the time? Am I making money directly from Viennese history? No, but I am definitely a professional and making money from having an understanding of that and having explored that. So the ability to explore at a place like that really, for me, makes a big difference. And I tell my kids that all the time. It's like, don't worry about what you're going to do with what you're learning. It's like you don't know yet. Just learn it. And HWS is a great place to just learn stuff.
I think that that's great advice, too, just to be able to embrace the liberal arts model and take as many different classes and as many different fields, because like you were just saying, you never know when you might need that information later.
And it's a privilege. I mean, you know, I think a lot of people push back against it and say, well, this is, you know, dumb, privileged people who are just spending time learning stuff, and what's the point, and learn a craft and all those things. And I understand that argument, but it's also the other side as well, which is like, yes, it is this great privilege to have an expanded mind and understand other cultures and other things you will never, ever think about later in life. Like, I'm never going to think about, like I said, about chemistry. It's like, why would I think about chemistry? It's not my job at all. But because I explored chemistry, I'm a more interesting person, and I'm a much better writer. And, you know, I can't, again, can I directly tie a chemistry class to my bank account? No. But I can indirectly, definitely, you know.
Yeah, I think that makes perfect sense. And it leads me to also wonder, how did you come to choose HWS when you were looking at schools in the first place? Were you always interested in a liberal arts education?
I mean, I was always interested in a liberal arts education because I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was, you know, I had the great advantage of being completely lost by the time I was done with high school and unsure about my future. And I wasn't a great student, and I felt, you know, HWS is seeing me as a whole person and accepting me as a whole person, not just as my grades. I had a learning disability as well. And so it was a place where I thought, okay, maybe I can be seen here because I don't know yet, and they'll give me a little time to figure it out. And they are, if they're accepting me, they're getting that I have some potential that they see that maybe even I don't see. And I wanted someplace small. I didn't want to go someplace big. I wanted someplace a little more intimate. If I had known how cold it was going to be, I might have thought twice. But it was fine. It ended up being fine. But those were really the factors that led into it.
How do you, what do you look for when you're creating shows or creating episodes or characters now? Because you've talked about looking at someone as a whole person. And how do you create these worlds and these people?
I think that, you know, on a sort of technical way, my way of approaching creating a character, and that could be a major character in a show, or that could be a character who has two lines in a scene in an episode, is that as far as they know, they are the star of the show as a human being. If they were a real person, this other person would come in and ask them a couple of questions, and they would give them that information. That other person would leave, and when another person leave, their world would continue wherever they were. And so my approach to every character is always to make them something. So, like I said, sometimes you need a character just to give the hero information, whatever that may be, or to get shot, or to be goofy, or whatever it's going to be. And so what way can you make that person as specific as possible so that they matter? And with, obviously, the hero of the show or a bigger character in the show, you can spend a lot more time doing that. And you spend, hopefully, many hours of television time showing how this person is specific and different and unusual and flawed and funny and all those things. And so anytime approaching any character, it has to be approached with that way. It's like, this is the only character that's ever going to be created. It's the only character in the show that matters. And because you're taking that much time and effort when you're talking about doing a whole show, you want to make sure that you're going to be able to have stories that can get into that, can be as specific and important and interesting, because you're going to populate it with people that are going to really demand, the character is going to demand that life is interesting. And so you have to find worlds that can tell interesting stories. And also you're going to have to find worlds that I can remain interested in for many years. And so the approach has to be kind of from that is, okay, these have to be people that can live and keep living and keep living without getting bored, without the audience getting bored, without the writers getting bored, without the actors getting bored. And they have to be something that you haven't seen before on TV. And so there's no way to do that with us. You can look at certain projects and be like, this is not going to be something that's going to keep me interested for 5 years. This is not something that's going to keep the audience interested for 5 years. Or maybe some other writer could keep them interested for 5 years, but I can't. And so that's sort of the approach to it. In terms of new projects, at this point, I have sort of an algorithmic thing that I do, which takes too long to explain, which is something I'm drawn to. I'll sort of run it through this algorithm with certain questions being asked about whether it fits this criteria, that criteria. And generally, if it hits enough of those points, then it's something that I should start looking at. And if it doesn't, then it's telling me that this is, even though it seems cool, because sometimes stuff seems like a great commercial idea, and so you're drawn to it. It's like, ooh, this could be really good. But you kind of know, like, this could be really good, but someone else needs to do it. I'm not the guy to do it. On a more sort of technical way, it can be a little algorithmic at this point, because I kind of know what I like and I kind of know what I'm good at. If I think about it, I don't know what I like and what I'm good at if I'm just instinctually looking at something. So I kind of need to run it through that. And then in terms of the work, it's like it's all about specificity. And then taking the time to make everybody very, very specific.
I think that makes a lot of sense, and it shows a lot in the characters that you've developed. Because when watching a TV program, you want to be invested in the characters, no matter how small. And it makes a difference to the show to know the characters and to know the world.
It also just makes you care. You know, if you have characters that every scene feels like it has some stakes and is important if you care about everybody in the scene. Like, even if by the end of the scene, three of those people are going to die and they're going to be gone, if he's going to walk out, you want to get a sense that whatever is going to happen between these people and their interactions matters. And if you don't care about them, it doesn't matter. And you notice that if you watch certain kinds of shows and, you know, the cop comes in and talks to the tattoo artist, have you seen this girl? Yeah, she was, you know, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And you see, like, okay, do I care about the tattoo artist, or am I just, no, this is a way for the cop to find his way to, or her way to find the bad guy. And those are shows that, you know, end up on a doctor's offices in a way. And they might be very successful shows, but it's like, and I don't judge anybody. Everybody does their thing, and everybody, you know, works really hard. But it's not, those things aren't interesting to me.
What kind of things did you find interesting when you were growing up watching TV and film, when you were first wanting to do this?
I mean, everything. Everything. I mean, from, you know, Dukes of Hazzard to Looney Tunes to Casablanca to The Godfather to Porky's. Like, everything was interesting to me because I was just sponging it all up. You know, there was no, there was nothing that I was like, I wasn't getting the sense that I'm getting something from this. I mean, that could be something horrible, like, you know, the Faces of Death documentary where they're showing people dying. That could be, you know, documentaries about, you know, old baseball teams or Nazis. And that could be, like I said, it could be Bugs Bunny cartoons. Three Stooges, Woody Allen. It's like everything provided something. I can't tell you what, except the answer to the what is in if you watch the work. I can't tell you where I got a sense of humor, whether it was Monty Python and Woody Allen and Mel Brooks, or you know who knows, or you know old you know His Girl Friday. It's like it's all part of the same, or Family Ties. It's like it's all part of the same, you know, soup. So there was really nothing I wouldn't sit and watch. Professional wrestling, anything. Because I guess I think I was just really drawn in by stories. The world made sense to me if it was organized as a story. And so this is a really simple way to do that. It felt like a relief to me to be in those stories, you know. So anything, I would watch anything.
That leads me to what is our last question that we like to ask people. And it's what advice would you give to your younger self, either starting college, just graduating? What advice would you give, knowing what you know now?
Relax. Don't you know, I said in my HWS commencement speech, don't be afraid to fail. Don't worry about what other people think. And be as kind to everyone as possible, including yourself.
That was Brad Falchuk from the class of 1993 on air with Career Journeys. Thank you so much for listening to the show this week. You can subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. And to check out more information, head over to hwsherald.com/podcast. Career Journeys is a co-production of The Herald, the campus newspaper of Hobart and William Smith Colleges, and the Salisbury Center for Career Services. Our show is produced by Alex Karai, with scheduling and coordination from Mal Murphy and Brandy Ferreira. Theme music is from Alex Karai and recorded with Kelly Walker. Our thanks to Brandy Ferreira and the Salisbury Center for Career Services, Bob O'Connor and the Office of Advancement, Kathy Williams, Mary LeClaire, and Peggy Kowalik from the Office of Communications, and Grace Rubel from The Herald. Our show is created by Alex Karai and Brandy Ferreira, recorded in studio at Scanlon Campus Center on the campus of Hobart and William Smith Colleges, with Brad Falchuk calling in from Los Angeles. I'm Alex Cry, and you've been listening to Career Journeys.